When I was a teenager growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I had a cutout of the New York City skyline on the ceiling above my bed. In the same way that you sometimes buy a dress as a reminder to become the person who would wear it, the image of all those anonymous buildings lit up at night was a visual placeholder for my future self. New York, to paraphrase Bob Dylan, was where I was from. I just hadn't gotten there yet. My first year in the city was 1999, the summer after my freshman year of college. The plan was to revel in not having a plan. For 18 years, I'd been at soccer practice or doing homework or emptying the dishwasher. Now, for the first time in my life, I had a stretch of totally unplanned, totally unstructured solitude before me. All I needed was a job. So early one June morning, I took my first solo subway ride down to the bottom of Soho. As I made my way north, increasingly drunk on the wine bemused old-school restaurant managers had poured me while they looked over my resume full of babysitting jobs, I played in my Walkman a mix made for me by a guy I'd met at school that year. It featured songs by bands I'd never heard of, Lost in the Supermarket by The Clash, Why Can't I Touch It by The Buzzcocks, Blank Generation by Richard Hell, Marquee Moon by Television. That's what was buzzing in my ears when I walked into the place that eventually hired me, a cafe called Pershing Square. It's what was in my ears in the afternoons as I took the bus across 23rd to get the A to High Street to hostess at Pershing Square's sister restaurant, the River Cafe. And it was the sound reverberating as I hitched a ride late at night back to Manhattan on the Maitre D's motorcycle. He often dropped me off at this restaurant on Park, not far from where Max's Kansas City had been, to meet a guy I knew from work, Nick Valenci, who played in a band called The Strokes, because the singer, Julian Casablancas, bartended there. When you ask people whose art has gone on to matter to millions what it was like to be there in the beginning, they'll often tell you there was nothing mythical or portentous about it at all. It was just the way life unfolded. James Murphy was a frustrated indie sound guy with a wallet chain looking for someone he could really talk music with when he met Tim Goldsworthy. Karen O had to do something to stave off depression during winter term at Oberlin, so she decided to learn guitar. Julian was the kid Nick noticed on the first day at a new school because he was wearing an old uniform from a different school. To me, Nick was the boy I bummed sticks of Big Red from at work. A lanky city kid who wore girls' jeans from the Gap and cheated off me during wine tests they'd make us take at the restaurant. Pinot Noir is a grape. Champagne is a region. We'd be at Pershing Square until early afternoon, then hang out for a few hours, wandering around Midtown and ducking behind pillars in office plazas to take turns off his one-hitter before I went to hostess and he went to practice. From Nick, I learned to play the city like a video game. Always keep moving. Score points for knowing that diner on South Broadway has killer pea soup, or that bar on St. Mark's doesn't card on Wednesdays, or that one pool hall on Houston has Monster Bash pinball and stays open 24 hours. Every choice, from what you wear, to how you walk, to which street you turn down next, is a potential portal to another level, to a part of the game you haven't even seen yet, to the unimaginable. After that summer, I went back to college, studied romantic poetry, and wrote a thesis on the Iliad. Nick dropped out and played SNL. It was a time that felt dizzying, though it turned out to be the calm before the many storms of the new millennium. September 11th caused a devastating reboot of everything we knew. Then came frenetic remaking of New York, and all the weird new phenomena that pulled us together and apart. The internet, the iPod, Facebook, and Twitter, the colonization of Brooklyn. In the late 90s, in the couple-year period before all these changes really began, the music scene in New York had a giddy sense of accelerating prospects. We sensed something important had been unleashed, even if it was unfathomable that anyone besides us would ever care. The city felt both expansive and intimate. Forgotten by everyone else, it seemed to belong only to us. To the drugs, to the music, to the other kids doing drugs and worshiping music. The Strokes and their immediate cohorts, mostly forgotten bands you will read about here, like the Mooney Suzuki and Jonathan Fireeater, as well as ones you likely know, like Yeah Yeah Yeahs, LCD Sound System, The Killers, and The Kings of Leon, were the soundtrack to that fragile era.